This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Congratulations on getting through your 9-to-5. Thank you so much for listening. It is The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610Sports.com, and the radio.com app. Coming up in about 30 minutes, we'll give you another chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. But right now, let's head to the phone lines right now as we continue our Royals opening day coverage sponsored by Google Fiber and be joined by our Royals insider, Josh Vernier. Vern, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing well. What's going on?
Let's just start with this, man. How do you think spring training went for the Royals? I understand that it's hard to really put a lot of stock into the numbers, but as we're winding this thing down and getting ready for the season, how do you think it went?
Well, first and foremost, everyone is leaving, or you know, as of right now, everyone is healthy. And just a quick look around the division, especially up to Chicago, you're grateful for health. Because, you know, nothing could derail this season quicker than an Adalberto Mondesi, Brad Keller injury during spring training. So that's a big thumbs up. Other than that, I think the mentality is something that I look for in spring training. I try not to get too results oriented, whether that's team or individual. But you can, in my opinion, learn a little about a team in the way that they interact with one another, the way that they talk about one another, and the way that they explain their goals and their expectations as a unit. And to me, it's been pretty lockstep. Sure, you're getting a lot of cliches that you would hear at any camp of, you know, there's a lot of talent in that room and we're going to surprise some people. And okay, you can throw all of that out. But as far as the acknowledgement of the lost seasons past, the past 2-3 years, the taste of losing that's been in the mouths of so many of these Royals players that came up through the organization, their willingness to acknowledge that and say that those days are done, putting pressure on themselves, putting pressure on their teammates. If you're not slightly more confident than you've been in years past, you're not going to talk the way that real leaders in this clubhouse have been talking. So overall, it's been a net positive of a camp.
Vern, obviously this spring, Bobby Witt Jr. has sort of been the star of it, and he's been the big talking point. How do you evaluate his spring, and what do you make of the decision to not have him on the opening day roster?
His spring, and I hate to parrot what Dayton Moore had to say, but it's true, and I guess I don't feel bad parroting Dayton. The guy knows more about baseball than us. But when a 20-year-old that received a near $8 million signing bonus or contract after being drafted number 2 overall, a guy that was raised in a big league clubhouse with a silver spoon in his mouth, for that guy to be not just accepted by grinders like Whit Merrifield and Hunter Dozier, but stars like Salvador Perez as well, for them to accept him and heap praise on him rather than doing what 99.9% of professional athletes, especially baseball players, will do, which is, you know, until you've done it in the show, until you've done it at the highest level, we're going to temper our expectations for you because A lot of kids have showed out in surprise. A lot of kids have done well in the minor leagues, but the jump to the big leagues is something different. Nobody knows that better than big leaguers. So for them to bypass the quote-unquote hazing stage of becoming a big leaguer and just anointing this kid as a future star, that to me speaks louder than any 484-foot home run that he could hit in spring training. The sign-off from that clubhouse, as Dayton said, means more than a lot of the statistics and performances that he showcased over the past month.
So if you had to break down this decision to not have Bobby Witt Jr. on the big league club from day one, and you had to say what percentage of it is just readiness and him not having the seasoning, the time to develop, and them wanting him to do it at the minor league level, how much of it do you think is service time and them trying to protect that on the back end?
I really don't think service time has much to do with it. I always go back to my belief that 2022 has always been the year that this organization has circled as when we report to spring training in 2022, the goal is going to be contend for the postseason. You know, you would love to say make the postseason, but I think 2022, when spring training starts, we'll all say that this Royals team should contend for the postseason, because you're going to have a full season under the belt of Brady Singer, Daniel Lynch, and Jackson Kowar. Even Asa Lacy could all make their big league debuts. So when they report to camp next year, along with Chris Bubich, all of them will have the expectation of being on the opening day roster and serving a pivotal role for this team. This year, in my opinion, 2021, I'm not saying it's a developmental year, but it's certainly not a season where if you fall short of the playoffs, you're going to look at it as a disappointment. You went into this offseason with that mindset of we should be better next year. We're going to learn how to win next year. But are we going to end up in October? I don't think anybody in the organization would sign off on that. Meaning, the plan was, as we all know, Nicky Lopez, Hanser Alberto at second base with Whit Merrifield in right field. If that's the plan coming into spring training 2021, and look, this organization has followed and known Bobby Witt Jr. since he was 16, 17 years old. So nothing that he's doing now is surprising him. And in fact, I'm off on that. They've known this kid since he became a teenager, since he was 13, 14. So they're not shocked that this guy's balling out at summer camp, tearing it up during spring training. They knew that when Nicky Lopez and Hanser Alberto were the expected opening day second baseman. So unless you suddenly believe 2021 is going to be the year that you contend and likely make the postseason, I don't see the need to throw your original plan out the window. This year was always going to be Bobby Witt Jr., yes, being a part of the spring training camp, but serving some time at Double A, making that jump to Triple A, and then making his big league debut more than likely coming up in September, and then debuting with this team on opening day 2022 in a year where the expectation will be playoffs. Service time to me had nothing to do with it. This has been the plan all along. Some people wanted the plan to completely change because Bobby Witt Jr. did what this organization knew he could do for 3-4 weeks in spring training. And to me, that's not reflective of a headstrong organization when you're willing to just throw your plan out the window because some kid performed well for 3 weeks against, let's acknowledge, some lesser than pitching talent for the most part.
Opening days next week. You can catch it right here on your home for Royals baseball, 610 Sports Radio. We're talking with our Royals insider, Vern. He's Josh Vernier. So we had on Danny Duffy. I don't know if you caught our conversation with Duff Man earlier today. What do you think the chances are? Like, he obviously loves it here, and he'd love to end his career here, but oftentimes players don't have that choice. What are the chances that at the end of this season, Danny Duffy's still a Royal?
Is that a question? Do I think he'll be traded?
Yeah, do you think that? Because, I mean, I would assume that somebody at some point at the end of a contract would be interested in Danny Duffy.
Yeah, I don't think that he'll be traded this season. because I don't know how sought after a – because, look, if you trade for Danny Duffy, you're getting him for, what, 2.5 months. And if I'm a team that's contending, Danny Duffy maybe slots at the highest as my number four starting pitcher. Or if you want to say he's a bullpen arm, okay. So we're going to trade for a bullpen arm that really hasn't performed out of the bullpen in the past half decade. So 2 months of a bullpen arm or a number four starter, I don't even think you get the return that you got for Trevor Rosenthal last year at the trade deadline. So then you need to ask yourself, are we that desperate for a roll of the dice prospect, a lesser than prospect? Are we that desperate for said prospect, or is it worth hanging on to Danny Duffy, utilizing him in whatever role he serves here in Kansas City, but also as a great ambassador for the organization? He is a fan favorite. And if he's obviously performing well enough to garner trade interest come the end of July, I don't see the return outweighing the benefit of keeping him around throughout the end of 2021. Now, does he return next year? That, to me, is a more interesting question, because so many Royals fans have already shooed Duffy to the bullpen by the end of the season. Well, you know, Duffy's still, 32?
Yeah.
Is he ready to wave goodbye to not just being a starting pitcher, but being paid like a starting pitcher? When he hits free agency, I'm sure there's going to be a team to come along, especially a team that would love to have the press conference of World Series champion and veteran Danny Duffy holding up their jersey. I think he finishes this year out as a Royal, but unless one of these young arms doesn't pan out, or they have to change their hope for a Bubich or a Lynch or a Lacy, I don't know where Duffy fits in the rotation, which means he's in the bullpen. And I know he loves the Royals, but to handcuff yourself to the bullpen at 32 going on 33, where there could be teams offering you a spot in the rotation, I think that might be tough for him to turn down.
Speaking of the rotation, Vern, what is the Royals' plan, at least that you understand right now, to start the season as far as the rotation goes? I mean, I'd assume that Brad Keller's the number one, and then how does everybody else kind of slot?
Yeah, Brad Keller starting opening day. Mike Minor will go game two. Brady Singer will finish off the series against the Texas Rangers. And then Danny Duffy will start the home opener for the Cleveland. Oh, he'll start for the Royals, but in Cleveland against the Cleveland baseball team, or whatever we're calling them.
Right now, we're talking to our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, joining us live on the show. Vern, it is that time where people ask you, what do you think the opening day lineup is going to be? I'm really only concerned about one person, where you think Mondesi is going to fit in the lineup. But if you were the one filling out the lineup card, what would you have their opening day lineup be?
Yeah, I think my answer is similar to what Mike Matheny's answer is, and that's Adalberto Mondesi in the three spot. It might sound scary to some, but the guy has been squaring everything up. And I know if I was in Mike Matheny's position and Adalberto Mondesi did what he did last September, showed me that, because that's really the first time Matheny's had a front row seat to that Adalberto Mondesi that we all saw flashes of over the past 5 years. When I saw that last September, if I'm Mike Matheny, and then I see how he's performing here in spring training, I understand what maybe people from, in the organization, or what the media is telling me about, oh, you got to be careful with Mondesi and you got to be delicate with him. Man, when I watch this kid play, he's the best player on the field, and I want him to get as many at-bats as possible with people on base, like a Whit Merrifield and an Andrew Benintendi, who will likely hit one and two respectively. Mike Matheny telling me, earlier this week, when Mondesi's going this well, he's going to be at or near the top of the lineup. When and if he starts to struggle, he understands that we're going to drop him in the lineup. I think the days of Ned Yost and worrying about getting in people's domes has really brainwashed some Royals fans to think that that all athletes, that all baseball players, that not a one of them can handle being up and down in the lineup. Mondesi, I think, is going to start off in the three spot, And again, when he's performing like this, I don't know a baseball man or a baseball woman that would have the ability to write him in the lineup anywhere outside of the top three, because just watching this guy day in and day out, he's the best player on the field.
So keeping it with the infield for the Royals, Hunter Dozier, I got a question later to you about what do you think this team can do well? Because we talk about a lot of question marks and uncertainty, and if this team is going to win 77 games or more, a lot of things have to be a certainty. Dozier's career is sort of weird because he struggled his first couple of years. He really hit his stride in 2019, and then last year it was already a lost year because of only being 60 games, plus he had COVID, so it delayed the start of his season. Where are you at with Dozier being a certainty and a guy they can depend on offensively this year?
I can't say he's a certainty, because the reason why 2017 and 18 didn't go his way were injuries. To me, I'll put Dozier in the same group as I do Mondesi and Soler. If they're on the field, they are plus players. I think Hunter Dozier is, especially if this guy's hitting in the seventh spot, I think Hunter Dozier 2019 is who he truly is. I thought the changes he made approach-wise, the comfort that he felt at the big league level midway through that 2018 season, when healthy, the guy has produced. Jorge Soler, when healthy, he's going to produce. Adalberto Mondesi, when healthy, he's going to produce. Even if the bat is only league average, what he brings defensively and what he brings on the base paths makes him a positive wins above replacement kind of player. So I really look at Mondesi, Dozier, and Soler all the same, where if they're in the lineup, the Royals are going to have a good offense. But when they're not in the lineup, when they're banged up, this is a it's a bad lineup. If you don't have three players with their capabilities, it all comes down to being on the field. If they're on the field, this lineup, in my opinion, should thrive.
Right now, talking to our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, for a couple more minutes as we really start our transition to talking more baseball as the Royals start their opening day next Thursday. So let's keep it in line with Hunter Dozier. What about this team would you say, I feel pretty comfortable that the Royals can do X in 2021?
Yeah, no, that's a question I brought up the past few weeks on the Hot Stove Show. You know, how is this team going to bully the opposition? So often, Royals fans will point to the offense and, oh man, we added Santana, we added Benintendi. Look, you're going to be hard pressed in Kansas City to ever put together a lineup that can bully the opposition. Because, yes, the Royals have a nice lineup, but so do the White Sox, so do the Yankees, so do the Angels, so do the Astros. I mean, there's a lot of American League teams that have a very strong 1-7. There are even some lineups that have a strong 1-7 that don't have three gigantic question marks. The guys that I just brought up, Soler, Dozier, Mondesi, and you can throw Andrew Benintendi in there as well. So I don't think the offense is guaranteed to be well above average. It should be good, but you better have a good offense in the American League if you're going to have any chance of being around come July and August. The rotation, I think there are too many questions to say there's any certainty there. To me, the top facet of this team is their defense, with Salvi, Lopez, Mondesi, and Taylor up the middle. I think their best facet is their defense, and that'll likely be followed by their bullpen. Sure, and we could talk about the question marks in the bullpen. What Staumont and Zimmer and Jesse Hahn, what they all did last year in a 60-game season without fans in the stands. Greg Holland was fantastic last year, but Greg Holland was fantastic a few years ago for the first 60 games of the season, and then fell off a cliff down the stretch and ultimately was DFA'd by the Arizona Diamondbacks. So can Greg Holland, can Wade Davis, can Irvin Santana, can those guys maintain after the first few months of the season? We'll see. I believe they do have a solid stable of arms in Omaha when and if a Santana, Davis, Holland begin to falter in the second half of the season. I don't think that they have any aspect of this team that can bully the opposition, much like in 14, 15, and 16, the bullpen bullied other teams. You knew if you fell behind the Royals 2-0 in the second inning, crap, we got four innings to score three runs or this game is over because that bullpen's coming out and we are not going to touch them. I don't think that this team has any specific traits that can just bully the other team. The bullpen and defense are going to be their hallmarks, but they're going to need a lot from Brady Singer, Brad Keller, Adalberto Mondesi, and I think Daniel Lynch will need to play an integral role over the course of this summer if this team's going to make September interesting.
Vern, let's go rapid fire really quickly before we get you out of here. Appreciate your time. Kyle Isabel, do you think he'll be on the opening day roster?
I do not, no.
What's
I don't think they would have reassigned him to minor league camp.
No, that's fair. Mike Matheny mentioned it. It didn't make sense to me just given their actions, yeah. But I figured I would ask.
I'll be honest with you. I think that was more of Matheny answering a question and, you know, not trying to put the flame out for Kyle Isbell, but I don't believe he'll be there.
Let's say that Nicky Lopez is bad for the first 60 games of the season. What happens?
I mean, the platoon's already happening at second base if he's bad for 60 games. Hanser Alberto could steal that position and get 5 out of every 7 starts.
What odds do you have that there'll be buyers at the deadline?
Very low. Let me put a percentage on it. I would say buyers at the deadline, 20%.
All right. So next Thursday, they're up 3-1. Who's coming out? It is 3-1 heading into the 7th inning. Who comes out for the 7, 8, and 9? How confident are you that the Royals win?
Very confident that they win. Partially because the Rangers stink, and partially because I do believe in this bullpen. I'll put it this way. I think, you know what, let's go Scott Barlow in the 8th, Scott Barlow in the 7th, Jesse Hahn in the 8th, Greg Holland in the 9th inning. If the 2, 3, 4 hitters come up in the 8th inning, I think Greg Holland would get that, and then maybe Jesse Hahn comes out in the 9th to face the bottom of the lineup. Nonetheless, to answer your question, Barlow, Hahn, Holland, I think, are their top 3 candidates right now.
I know we've asked you this before, but now that we're less than a week away, what's your floor for this team? What's your ceiling for the 2021 Royals?
Boy, the floor can go pretty low, especially with all of those injury-prone players that they have. The floor is 100 losses, 100 and change. I think the ceiling, if Brady Singer performs like he's the best starter in this rotation, let me just put it this way. I always have an X, Y, and Z. If X, Y, and Z all go well over the course of this summer, the Royals will have a chance to make the playoffs. To me, X, Y, and Z are Adalberto Mondesi, Brady Singer, and Daniel Lynch. If Mondesi, for a majority of the season, what we saw in September, if Brady Singer takes a step forward and is the best starter in this rotation, and if Daniel Lynch can make 15 starts, I think they, have a ceiling of 85-86 wins.
That is our Royals insider, Josh Vern. You're getting you ready for opening day. Our opening day coverage is sponsored by Google Fiber. Thanks, Vern.
Thank you.
That is our Royals insider, Josh Vern. You're joining us on the show. I know you and I are on a little bit different path when it comes to how important this season is sort of in the development and them staying on track with the timeline and if they're going to be good. That's where I am. If they hit their floor, what Vern was talking about, they lose 100 games, I think their timeline of getting back to being competitive is probably off by another 18 to 24 months. If this team takes a legitimate step forward, and let's say they do what I think they can do and win 77 games, heading into 2022, especially when I assume that Witt Jr. is going to be on the roster, if you win 77 games, you feel really optimistic about some pitching. You get Danny Duffy's number off the book, so you still got a little bit of money to go out and make some moves in free agency. I think there's going to be a, not expectation, but there's certainly going to be a hope around the team that they can grab one of those wild card spots in 2022 if this season goes well.
If they're not going to win 82 or 83 games, then and I'm not trying to sound like a jerk here, I don't really care how many games they win as long as there's individual improvement. Like, if Brad Keller does what he did last year and just stays healthy, if Brady Singer capitalizes on what he did a year ago, if at the end of the year, say September, a little bit sooner, we get a chance to see Bobby Witt Jr., if Adalberto Mondesi is healthy, like, I don't really care if that adds up to 75 wins or 65 wins or 80, whatever the total is. Now, if it means that they're going to make the playoffs and they become buyers, then it's going to be a really fun summer. We can have a totally different conversation. I'm just not there yet. I just don't think that they're maybe quite as close as you do. So all I'm looking for, not necessarily marked improvement in the win-loss category, because I disagree. I don't think that you need incremental improvement. That's the best way to do it. If you can win 60 games and then win 70 games, and the next year you can win 80 games. But I just think as long as they get a lot of those young pitchers experienced, Bobby Witt Jr. gets a handful of at-bats, and Adalberto Mondesi's healthy, then this year was a success, period.
Yeah, I just look at the Royals and I just kind of look at the track record and the building blocks of kind of most teams, and that's typically how it goes. Like, I know we talk so much about 14 and 15, and obviously those were special years, but they started making that ascend once they started adding more and more pieces from the farm system. I mean, in 2010, they won 67 games. In 11, they won 71. In 2012, they won 72. They then took a huge jump in 2013 to win 86 games, and then in 14, they won 89, and then they won 95 games in 2015. Like, they were clearly trending in the direction of being a playoff team. Now, none of us knew they were going to be a World Series winning team those 2 years, but they were taking those kind of steps. They've been in this stage for too long, in my opinion, of just being a bad baseball team. 58 wins, 59 wins. Obviously, last year doesn't count. I would love to see them take that jump to be a 73 to 77 win team.
There was also, and you're right, what you're saying. Like, last time they did have marked improvement, and then eventually went to back-to-back World Series, then we had a parade. That's the typical way to do it. All I'm saying is when they did that, if you remember, it was this guy comes up, and then later on in the year, this guy comes up, then the offseason, then the next year we'll bring up this guy, then they make a trade for Lorenzo Cain and Alcides Escobar. Like, it was really a 3 or 4 year thing at the same time minor leaguers were coming up. I think that this year, C-Dot, you're going to see 7 different guys that you've never seen in a Royals uniform. You're going to see Ace Lacy. You're going to see, at some point, you're going to see Bobby Witt Jr. You're going to see all these different names that we've heard of, Daniel Lynch, but you haven't actually seen in a Royals uniform. To me, that's why I don't necessarily think their win total matters, as long as those guys at some point get experience with a big league club.
Coming up on the other side, there was a massive couple of trades in the NFL today. We'll give you our reaction to that. We'll also let you ask your questions in the segment that you control, Ask Us Anything. All that coming up next, and you'll also have a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. All you need to do is keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, your official home of the Kansas City Royals.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Your last chance to win $1,000 on our national cash contest today. Text the word virtual, V-I-R-T-U-A-L, virtual to 72881. The code word is virtual, V-I-R-T-U-A-L. Text that word to 72881, and you could potentially be our $1,000 winner in the national cash contest. Go ahead and start texting in your questions, 913-576-7610. We will answer your questions coming up in a little bit in Ask Us Anything.
Did you see those brothers from Eastern Washington that killed KU were transferring?
I did see that.
Bring them here, man. Bring them to Lawrence. I'd love that. They need a go-to guy or two, don't they? They can put the ball in the bucket.
Coming up in just a little little bit, we'll go to Ask Us Anything. It was a lot happening today in the NFL. We would have talked about it today, but the Royals are a little bigger deal, at least locally. Here's Ian Rappaport on all the moves that happened today in the National Football League.
Yeah, multiple major moves that really, as you said, changes the entire landscape of the top 10 and beyond. We'll start with the big one right off the bat, the San Francisco 49ers. They go from number 12 all the way to number 3. They trade with the Miami Dolphins, a huge trade. So here is how it breaks down. The Dolphins, they go, again, from 3 to 12, and they get future, the biggest part of this trade, future first-round picks in 2022 and 2023. And, of course, for the Miami Dolphins, you say, well, that takes them out of everything, takes them out of the top 10. And for the 49ers, it puts them right at number 3, prime position to take their quarterback of the future. They also have another quarterback on their roster right now named Jimmy Garoppolo. I am told they have no plans to move on from Jimmy Garoppolo. We'll see if some team can change their mind, but they do believe right now that Garoppolo will be on the roster, which they believe to be a playoff-ready roster. But no, we were not done. So, of course, we have the Dolphins now at number 12. They trade with the Philadelphia Eagles. They go from 12 to 6. So it puts the Dolphins right in the mix for whatever they want to do with an extra first rounder and change. And then for the Philadelphia Eagles, it basically takes them out of the quarterback mix because they go from 6 to 12. I know that early on in the process, Zach Wilson was someone that the Eagles believe was a really strong prospect. They really liked him. It's clear, my two cents here, he's not in striking distance at all. They move back and consider that to be the best way to build their team.
That's Ian Rappaport of NFL Network on the big moves and deals that happened today in the NFL. Let's at least start local, and then we can talk about the moves individually. I mean, this really goes to show you the value that the Chiefs got moving from 27 to 10 to go get Patrick Mahomes. I mean, when you really go back and really analyze that trade, and all they had to give up was one future first-round pick, I mean, maybe it was like the NFL decided at that point that they would never let another team get fleeced the way that Buffalo got fleeced, and they certainly turned it into good players. They got Tre'Davious White in that deal, and he's probably one of the best corners in the league. But, I mean, you traded another team to get their franchise quarterback, and I wouldn't say that the Chiefs really got taxed for making that kind of move. It seems like if you're going to make that kind of move and that kind of jump to move up 17 spots the way that the Chiefs do, you really get hit hard. I mean, San Francisco got hit hard. I mean, they had to give up two future first-round picks to move up to 3 to go get their quarterback. Obviously, it was a great trade because of the player and what he's turned into. But when you think about what the Chiefs gave up to get Patrick Mahomes, it's nothing in regards to getting your quarterback.
Yeah, and it wasn't that long ago. That's the crazy part. Although the league does change pretty quick like that. I mean, Sam Bradford, when he was the number one overall pick about 10, 12 years ago, he got like $60 or $70 million. So these things change. It is crazy to think the compensation the Chiefs did not have to get up that landed them Patrick Mahomes. Like, in hindsight, the Chiefs legitimately would have gave up their first-round pick for the next 30 years if they would have known Patrick Mahomes would get off to the start of his career that he's gotten off to. So you said it earlier, maybe it's the best trade, at least draft day trade, in the history of the NFL. I don't even think anything's close.
I mean, I'm just looking at it right here. I mean, the trade was, so Kansas City traded the 27th overall pick, a third round pick, and then a 2018 first round selection to the Buffalo Bills to move up to 10 to select Patrick Mahomes. Think about that in comparison of what San Francisco just traded to potentially get Justin Fields or Trey Lance. I mean, they gave up, obviously, the 12th overall pick. You have to trade your selection. Two future first round picks and a third? Like,
they also went, I mean, the Chiefs traded for the 10th pick and had a little bit of a risk that either Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes is still going to be there. Obviously, they didn't trade up until right before. San Francisco is going to have their pick of the litter at this point. Like, when you make that trade for the number 3 overall pick, it means that you probably can't get Wilson. It means that you surely can't get Trevor Lawrence. But if you're interested in any other quarterback, you know you're going to be able to get that guy at 3.
Yeah, if I'm giving you a top 10 pick, which what the Chiefs used to select their quarterback, I'm going to need more than the 27th overall pick. And Kansas City was a playoff team. So you're what? They traded to get up to 10. They traded the 27th pick, a third round pick. So it's a low third round pick. So we're talking in what? The 90th range. And then we're talking the 22nd overall pick. That's what it cost to get up to 10. That's silly. It doesn't make any sense why Buffalo made that trade. Now, like, it'd be one thing if they hit them with another additional first round pick. But the fact that the Chiefs only had to give up one future first round pick to trade up to 10 is just wild.
The Chiefs should just give up another first round pick. The old Gil Mesh, like, look, we owe it to you. At this point, you can just go ahead and take it because we ended up with Patrick Mahomes. And that draft, it's weird because there were a couple of players that were taken ahead of Patrick Mahomes that I don't know if the team goes to bed every night regretting that they didn't take Patrick Mahomes. Like Myles Garrett, for example. Imagine what Cleveland would be if they had Patrick Mahomes. Myles Garrett's a great player. He ain't Patrick Mahomes. Carolina, for example, they picked ahead. They took Run DMC. Nothing against Christian McCaffrey. He is great, but how different would it be if Carolina had Patrick Mahomes? It's weird because I think that all these teams, in some extent, are kicking themselves. Certainly the Bears for getting Mitchell Trubisky, and this is another conversation for another day. We've talked a lot about the interchangeable parts, if you will, that would have been Deshaun Watson in Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes in Houston. Now that you've got all this, at least conversation, at least allegation going on with Deshaun Watson, it's a good thing that they didn't call his name and they went Patrick Mahomes.
Two teams to me that always get let out of this conversation are San Francisco, who drafted Solomon Thomas that year, and also Cincinnati, who drafted John Ross in the top 10. Like, those are two teams that very clearly should have drafted a quarterback but decided to go in a different direction. So about these trades specifically, if you're San Francisco, there's really no cost that's too big if you end up getting it right. Like, this is one of those pass or fail kind of things. If you draft Sam Darnold out of this, then everybody's getting fired. Shanahan's getting fired. John Lynch, you're getting fired. I don't care that you've been to a Super Bowl. If they get this right, then you got a franchise quarterback and you're probably going to a Super Bowl. Like, that's what getting it right at the quarterback position can mean. And I really trust Kyle Shanahan. I think that Shanahan is one of the top five offensive minds in the NFL. I think it's like Andy Reid, McVay, Shanahan. Like, I think there's some guys who, if that person is on your staff, that's your offensive coordinator, that's your play caller, you just have an advantage over everybody else. So he clearly knows who he wants to take. Like, he clearly either really loves Trey Lance or really loves Justin Fields and feel like that's a quarterback of the future type kind of thing. Lance actually makes a lot of sense. If you think about it, you have Jimmy Garoppolo play this year and he's your starter. You kind of redshirt Trey Lance and let him catch up to speed coming out of the FCS. And then in 2022, he's ready to hit the ground running in his second year in the league. Like, Trey Lance makes some sense if you're not going to start him right away.
Do you think Jimmy's their starter next year?
This season right now?
Yeah.
I do think he's going to be their starter.
Because that's at least the indication that they're giving. If I were them, I would say, look, we're a good enough team right now to win the Super Bowl, or at least to get really far. Like, I think that if they didn't have a couple of injuries last year and Jimmy Garoppolo took a little bit of a step back from the Super Bowl season, of course got hurt himself, then that is a really good team with a really good coach and a good defense and a good offensive line. That team certainly has a lot of parts where if I were them, I would do exactly what you just said. I'd keep around Jimmy, even though he's wildly expensive. What's he, like $27, $28 million per
His
year?
His contract's not that bad for a starting quarterback in the league. It's basically a two-year, $52 million deal.
I mean,
that's not bad.
For how good he is, that you're paying him top half the NFL money for like the 22nd best quarterback
that's
in the NFL.
That's just what it costs to have a veteran quarterback in the league. I actually don't think Garoppolo's contract's that bad. I mean, it's basically 2 one-year deals at $26 million.
Well,
that's not bad.
That whole conversation brings us back to the Patrick Mahomes timing and talent thing. Like, Jared Goff got paid a couple of off seasons ago. Well, it's like nobody thought Jared Goff deserved the money. It was either do we let him walk or do we pay him? So they just paid him. Dak Prescott. Cowboys have been running that problem for the last couple of years. I would say half the teams in the league, Derek Carr, once their quarterback's money comes due for his big-time contract, they sit in a room and they ask themselves, which direction do we want to go? Do we want to go all in with this guy, or do we want to run far away from this guy? And then there's what the Dallas Cowboys did, which is let's just buy ourselves some time. I think the Chiefs, C-Dot, are one of like three teams in football that know what their answer is going to be at quarterback 3, 4, 5, 10 years down the line. Literally. I mean, the Bills with Josh Allen. What other team knows for sure 3, 4 years from now who their quarterback's going to be?
I mean, I think that Baltimore feels pretty good about their quarterback situation. I assume this offseason they're going to pay him. I mean, obviously San Francisco feels really good about their quarterback situation. The Jets feel really good about it. Jacksonville has to feel really good about it.
They don't even have their quarterback yet. I mean, none of those teams even have their guy yet. Of course, when you draft a quarterback, you think 4 or 5 years from now it's going to be our guy. They thought that was Josh Rosen. They thought that was Sam Darnold. There's a million examples of that.
Of course, what I'm saying is if you're the Jets and you made the decision today that today the Jets drafted Zach Wilson, I assume San Francisco called about said player, and they were like, we'd rather have Zach Wilson than have 3 first-round picks. That's the decision that the Jets made today. So now we'll see if it works. You're right, he could end up being a bust, but the Jets told you today for the foreseeable future, Zach Wilson is going to be our quarterback.
And that's a franchise that really knows how to identify a quarterback, right? When's the last time they had a good quarterback? Chad Pennington?
I mean, Kansas City wasn't really good at drafting identifying quarterbacks until they was.
They didn't try. When's the last Kansas City didn't try? It was different. The Jets drafted a bunch of first-round quarterbacks in between. The Chiefs didn't. Between Todd Blackledge and Patrick Mahomes, the Chiefs drafted a grand total of zero first-round quarterbacks, so it's not like they failed. They didn't even try.
Yeah, no, they didn't try. But I'm saying is you would have never guessed for an organization that was so scared to do it that the first time they get it, they don't just hit the lottery.
Right.
Like, they became Jeff Bezos
they
immediately.
Right.
Like, that's not really how the system is supposed to go. I would say the Dolphins today told us their decision on how they feel about Tua. They had the opportunity to take one of those quarterbacks. They traded away the opportunity to take one of those guys. I assume they're going to take a skill position player, Kyle Pitts, or one of the wide receivers. The Eagles today, I really like what the Eagles did today. Like, they've already made a decision on who their quarterback's going to be. You still can get a really talented player. We'll see what it looks like this 1 year with Jalen Hurts and see if he's a viable option. The Eagles are going to have three first-round picks next year in theory. They're going to have the Dolphins pick. They're going to have their own pick, and we think they're going to have Indianapolis's pick for Carson Wentz. The Eagles give themselves at least a 2-year window of figuring it out. We'll see if Jalen Hurts can be a starter in the league. If he can be a starter in the league, we got three first-round picks to strengthen the parts around him. Or if Jalen Hurts stinks, we got three first-round picks to go get our quarterback. Not bad for what Philadelphia did.
By the way, real quick, some breaking news. I hate to interrupt. Sammy Watkins has signed with the Baltimore Ravens. A 1-year, $6 million contract with $5 million guaranteed. The former Chiefs wide receiver now in Baltimore.
I thought that the Baltimore Ravens actually made a lot of sense for him.
Suckers.
I don't think he's bad on a $5 million deal.
All right. I mean, if he only plays five games and scores three touchdowns, you're not getting your money's worth. That's what's based on his track record. That's what's going to happen. I knew there was going to be a good team to convince themselves if we get Sammy Watkins, he's going to stay healthy. He's going to be our guy. Sometimes when there's a player that you don't have a lot of faith in, you want those other good teams to sign him. Like, for example, when I heard that Jadeveon Clowney got signed by the Titans, I was like, oh, great. The Titans are in the AFC, and they're a good team, and he sucks. So I'm great with this move. Sammy to Baltimore? Awesome.
Yeah, I actually don't think this is a bad trade for them. I mean, the price is just right, a $5 million deal. Like, that's a nothing kind of contract for a guy. The Ravens could certainly use a little bit more when it comes to the wide receiver. He's going to be a number two kind of in that same vein. He's a really good run blocker. I actually think that's a good move for them. That's not the only move you can have. You didn't, like, substantially upgrade your wide receiver core with just this one move. But for a team that's definitely deficient, I actually don't think that's a bad move for the Baltimore Ravens.
Of course you didn't substantially upgrade. Like, Sammy Watkins is not an above average wide receiver. In theory, he is. At one point, he was. When he got drafted, he was. But again, if we're talking about actual numbers and stats and productivity, he's just a little bit below average. So, yeah, it's a fine signing. Good for them.
I mean,
maybe they can play off Sammy.
I mean, if he's the same player that he was in 2019, I think you take that deal for $5 million, 52 catches, 700 yards, three touchdowns. You probably take that if you're Baltimore for the contract they gave him.
Yeah, I just don't think that he's that guy. I think he's more likely the guy that you've got the couple of years since then where he's only on the field like 40% of the time. And when he's out there, he's definitely not in the end zone. Sam Watkins is a waste of money, in my opinion. He's a complete and total waste of money. So if Baltimore's the team that decided to blow their money on him, cool.
Let's answer our question on the text line, 913-576-7610.
I have a question.
Yes.
In these conjugal visits, you can have sex with women?
Yep.
You sure can. Okay, I'll do it.
That's a very good question.
Yes, I thought so too.
Text in your questions, 913-576-7610. If you got a question, we will answer your question. That's kind of how this segment works. Would you rather retake the ACT or do your own taxes?
My mom does my taxes. I'd retake the ACT just to see how I do. I got kicked out of the ACT. Have I told you that story?
I've not heard it.
Yeah, I was with my buddy Nick Palomba, and one of the questions in the math section was about a parabola. You ever heard of a parabola?
I have. I don't remember what it is, but I heard that.
I had no idea what a parabola was, so I thought it'd be funny, and I yelled out, "Hey, Nick, parabola!" And the person who was giving us the ACT didn't think it was very funny, and they kicked me out. So I took it again. I got like a 22.
Rob, which one would you rather do? Would you rather retake the ACT or do your own taxes?
I have never done my own taxes. Look at that ACT. The ACT is basically like the Wonderlic, right? It's just harder and more taxing.
Longer.
Doing your taxes doesn't seem that hard.
I've just never done it. I have no frame of reference for it.
Do you do your taxes?
No, I pay somebody to do it.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't pay somebody. I say, here, Mom, can you do this? I'm a child, and she does it.
Yeah,
it's just plug and play. You could do it if you really wanted to.
Bomani has this theory. He's like, these people do the taxes all the time. You only do it one time a year. That to me, it's worth the couple hundred dollars to have somebody like this is what they do for a living. They can help get you the best possible deal you can on your taxes. So yeah, I'd do it.
He's right. It's kind of like changing your oil. I mean, if you're only going to do it a couple of times a year, like if I wanted to put my car up on the stilts and get underneath it and mess with the oil pan, do all that. Yeah, I could probably do it. I've done it before, but if I'm only going to do it a couple of times a year, leave it to the pros.
Yeah, I don't really want to take the time that it takes to change the oil, yeah, especially good. When it comes to this, but to doing the taxes, it's just I forward them all of my financial information.
It takes a lot of time.
I Zoom with them on the thing, and then that's it. That's what it is. And then when my tax return comes back, I pay them out of that, and that's how we move forward. So that is how I pay my taxes every single year. Sean, where are you taking your girlfriend this weekend?
So tonight we're staying home, and I told her that we could just watch whatever she wanted because I'm watching UFC on Saturday night. So that's how it works. Like Friday night, she can watch what she wants. Saturday, I got the TV, college basketball, and then, of course, UFC. And so we're watching the stupidest show of all time, dude. Oh, my goodness. What do you know about Summer House?
I've never heard of that show before.
Oh, guys, I feel awful for you if your lady's dragging you through the pain. It's on Bravo, and then afterwards they have, like, that guy from Bravo do the after show.
Andy Cohen?
Yes, doing what happened. It's basically, I know that you like Real World, but Real World, how do you think the average person on Real World was?
Probably 22 to 24.
These people are like 40, and it's basically the same thing as Real World. It's pathetic. It's awful. It's called Summer House, and that's what I'll be watching tonight.
Who do you think are the candidates for the Texas and OU job? I actually haven't really done a whole lot of reading yet on the Oklahoma job because it's the Oklahoma basketball job. Who cares? Texas, I think it's going to be – I think Chris Beard is their number one candidate. I think if you asked all the boosters who would you like to hire, I think they would like to hire Chris Beard. I think it's his job to lose.
You always tell me you might as well ask. The worst they could tell you is no. So go after Chris Beard. Go after bigger names. Go after Jay Wright. See if you can say, hey, we'll pay you double what you're making or whatever. They got all the money in the world in Texas. They gave Shaka Smart way too much money in way too many years. So, and then in
I hear you. I just think Beard's being like.
Beard makes all the sense in the world.
I would guess that they'll call John Calipari and have him say no. Calipari ain't leaving his job to take the Texas job. So, like, it's just a waste of a phone call. But if you want to make the phone call and just have him tell you no, sure. But Chris Beard should really listen. Like, Texas to me has, like, always been, like, this sleeping giant at basketball just because of their athletic department. Like, even though the fan interest isn't super high, I mean, I'm still guessing that Texas probably spends top 20 money on their basketball program. So if they've got those kind of resources, you're in a super fertile recruiting ground, and arguably the best college town in the country, Texas could be a great basketball program with the right person in charge.
Facilities are great. Alumni, as you mentioned, all the money in the world, fertile recruiting grounds. Yeah, Texas basketball is a good job. I mean, for like a 10-year period, TJ Ford, LaMarcus Aldridge, PJ Tucker, Kevin Durant, like they put a bunch of not just okay players in the league, good players in the league. As far as Oklahoma goes, what's my guy's name at Loyola?
Porter Moser.
That's who I'd hire, that guy.
Please stop calling him your guy.
Your guy. I'd Thank hire you. Your guy.
Yeah, I don't know why he would leave that job. I mean, if he didn't leave the last time they went to the Final Four, I think he's going to stay. I think he's a lifer there. I think he's Mark Few.
That'd be sick. Because if you think about it, in the city of Chicago, there's like 20 D1 schools. None of them have ever done anything in basketball that I can remember, at least for a long time. That'd be sick if they could build a powerhouse in Chicago at some small school. That'd be great.
That's why it never makes any sense to me why DePaul isn't better at basketball.
That's what I'm saying. DePaul
just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, DePaul. Like, DePaul.
I get why Northwestern isn't much better at basketball. DePaul just doesn't make any sense to me.
I'm not saying they should be a powerhouse, but there's literally all these different Division I schools in Chicago. Like, you want to talk about fertile recruiting grounds in Texas, Chicago basketball is king. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of players to recruit from. You would think at some point one of those schools would do something. Maybe it's Loyola Chicago.
I think that actually Chicago is the number one place for prep high school talent.
That's what I'm saying. So at some point, you got to have a college when you've got 20 of them there that's going to be successful. I'm not saying UMKC level of success. I mean, that's shooting for the stars.
Who's two, you think, after Chicago, Ruff? Like, right now, like, Chicago has the best prep players. Who's second?
It gets weird because I would say New York.
I don't think it's New York anymore. I think it's Dallas. I don't think it is anymore.
I think it might be Dallas.
They're all over the place in Dallas.
I honestly think, like, you know what might be crazy? I think the answer might be Toronto.
Toronto?
Think about how many NBA players right now are from Toronto. It's a lot from Toronto. The answer might really be them. Atlanta's super high on that list, too. Like, that whole area is super high.
It gets weird,
Kansas
too.
City top 25?
No.
Top 50?
I would say maybe like top 30. Kansas City is low-key pretty good at it.
Yeah. Thank you, Rob.
I'm not saying top 10, but they put Division I guys out there all the
look
time.
At the tournament. They're always like, this kid from Kansas City.
Oh, yeah.
I go, hey, who knows?
I'm not saying NBA hoopers. They put kids D1.
I was talking more league. But, yeah, no, if we're talking about sending guys to D1, then, yeah, I mean, the answer is probably – It's probably a lot of other places other than that. We just ain't thinking about it. You know what I mean? Like Houston super high on that list. And we're just talking about not sending guys to the league. Thanks so much for listening. Back again on Monday. We got a lot of stuff planned for opening day. We appreciate you listening. Take care of yourself. It's The Drive.